You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 1st, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Bristol Palin Abstinence Only Birthing Center, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, people. How you doing out there in 2016? We're talking to you from 2015, yeah. So it's like magic. It's like science fiction.
It's like the clock turned.
Well, there is that, but it's a whole new year.
So Wonkette is calling Bristol Palin's new baby eggnog.
Yeah. I prefer nutmeg, but that's just me.
Nutmeg.
That's just me.
It's a very pretty baby. It really is.
It's a beautiful baby.
We don't make fun of pretty babies because babies are babies and they're innocent.
Right.
But Eric Bolling, who is not innocent.
No. He's the opposite of innocent.
Actually asked if Chelsea Clinton timed her pregnancy. Now, this is the employed... educated, married Chelsea Clinton.
Uh-huh.
Did she time her... He didn't use any of these words. I'm just adding all this information. Did he time her second legitimate pregnancy to help her mom's presidential campaign?
Yeah. The political rhythm method.
This is during the same week that the baby's name is Sailor. Sailor Palin.
Uh-huh.
Sailor Palin was born on the day of the airing of grievances for Festivus.
Again, baby's adorable, not
baby's
laughing
adorable
at baby.
Baby's adorable and sweet and looks sweet and older brother loves her and it's so nice and so forth. Although I will say, not ironically, apparently Bristol Palin did share a picture of her children on Instagram. And she said, my family couldn't be more complete.
Yeah.
Wonkette pointed out, well, actually it could.
Yeah, you're short one thing.
You're short one.
Not all families have to have that.
You don't know, and nothing against single moms in this world. I've been one, you know.
No.
I know how hard it is to be a single mom. All of my children were born in wedlock, but there is no judgment here, you know, for people that have had babies, however they've had them.
Unless
you're a total hypocrite.
You make your entire career out of thumping the Bible and bashing people who are not, like, who are morally inferior to you.
Yeah, yeah.
In which case.
And getting mad at Barack Obama for forcing IUDs on 10-year-olds, which he never did. Yeah. So.
Never happened. And we're not going to talk too much about the fact that apparently we're going to talk about Bill Clinton some more this year.
Yeah.
Ruth Marcus, also known as David Brooks in a dress. You know, who's David Brooks's, you know, little trollish liberal opposite number sometimes on some TV shows, got all, you know, all hot and bothered at the prospect of getting to talk about Bill Clinton's penis again.
Yep.
Those were the good old days when you could just drone on and on about Bill Clinton and blowjobs and Bill Clinton and cigars and not get thrown off the air, because that was what news was back in the 90s. But it's gotten so much better since then. And that's when they were innocent. That's when the news people could just be horrified and indignant. All the people that currently occupy big, important seats really cut their teeth on ignoring real news in favor of taking any right-wing troll bait that was tossed out there by right-wing news outlets.
Ignoring that Benghazi started back during the Clinton administration, which is you witch hunt until you, as you said, you know, you're going through this sewer and you find a nickel.
Right.
And then you up and it's like, oh, look, shiny coin. And everybody turns and said, it was all worth it. We found something wrong.
See, there was something there all along. All of the shit we talked about up until now has been justified.
Yep.
And we will ignore the fact that long history of how Clinton got sitting on a stand under oath in a hearing which immediately leaked, which was never supposed to leak, was at the end of a long, well-funded, massive attempt to stage a coup to overthrow the Clinton administration, to destroy the Clinton administration at any cost, which is why anybody who's been watching Obama for the last 7 years and watching the right frantically trying to smash and destroy anything he tried to do, undercut his legitimacy and overthrow his presidency, hasn't been surprised.
And what happened when David Brooks mentioned how remarkably scandal-free the Obama administration has been?
The entire right wing freaked out. Entire right wing freaked out because it hasn't been scandal-free. Because what about birtherism?
And
what about
IRS? And,
yeah. And, they went through that long list of entirely fake scandals that they
Solyndra.
Yeah. But they just pulled out their ass because they know that nickel is down there. They know there's a pony in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And they'll just keep face planting in piles of shit and digging deeper and deeper and deeper. And
until they find a nickel. And Ruth Marcus is helping out
a lot. She will be trailing along behind, waiting for that nickel to show up because she just wants to talk about Bill Clinton's penis so bad. And now that Hillary Clinton's running, well, Bill Clinton's long history of raping people and abusing women and assassinating his opponents will be once again, A, fair game, and B, exhaustively debunked by everyone who will be ignored on the left.
And let's make sure we compare Bill Clinton to Bill Cosby also,
right.
Because they're both named Bill. Okay.
Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, who did everything that the right wanted married couples to do.
Yes.
To save their marriage. They had a problem, like apparently every other person on the right has, except instead of weeping and breaking down and talking about how God has forgiven me, even though I'm a sinner, every time they stick it in some weird, co-ed's hole or follow some guy into a men's room or go down and hike the Appalachian Trail with somebody and end up humiliating wife number two or wife number three. I believe Newt Gingrich is up to wife number three now.
Yep.
Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton stayed together, worked on their marriage, raised their children, and continued onward as a couple, which I thought was the point of doing that. But of course it's not, because they're Democrats and their name is Clinton, so we must destroy them.
Yep.
So that's apparently I am going to talk about that this week.
Well, and now that if they run out of Clinton to talk about, which, is hard to do. They can always talk about how Paul Ryan is now a rhino.
Yeah.
And his Muslim beard.
Yeah. Everyone knows what rhino is, or people who don't. It's an acronym that stands for Republican in name only. He's not a real conservative. He's not a true conservative.
Because he didn't shut down the government.
Yeah.
And that's what real conservatives do.
And this is, go back to any podcast we've done over the last 317 that we've done. And you'll find us mentioning on and off the fact that there is no bottom to this barrel. There's no point at which they stop doing this, because the only way you can be a good conservative is by looking at everyone around you and finding someone who is less conservative than you and blaming them for your problems.
And
the only acceptable answer to any question about why your public policies have failed so catastrophically is, well, they weren't conservative enough.
Yeah.
So no one is ever conservative enough for Rush Limbaugh and the little hatchlings that he's created.
And Ann Coulter and those types, yeah.
So anytime anyone does anything that remotely resembles trying to govern, that person will be cast out as in league with the Kenyan usurper and not a real conservative, not a real Republican, which is what is happening right now to Paul Ryan, and which masks the fact that Paul Ryan is nuts. The agenda that all of these not quite conservative enough Republicans are promoting is wildly to the right of George Bush's policies, which were disasters. So that's how far the frame on the Overton window has been pushed, that Paul Ryan is now in the center.
Absolutely. Driftglass, you mentioned that this is our 317th episode.
Uh-huh.
Next week is our six-year anniversary as podcasters.
Really?
6 years. We started in first podcast was January 10th, 2010. Don't go back and listen to that episode.
No.
I swear to God, it sucked.
It sucked.
But I was drunk.
Yeah.
I'm sure I was drunk.
And it was 9 hours long, and it was mostly me talking about Inagata DeVita and how it's an underrated
And it turns out that the traditional six-year anniversary gift is a PayPal donation.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
That is so sweet. Or an Amazon purchase directed, to your podcast.
Someone pointed out that they got an Amazon gift card for Christmas. And then they went and used it at our site. And they said, this is the worst money laundering scheme ever.
Yeah, it is.
It's not a good one. It wouldn't work for a money laundering scheme. But shopping at Amazon, we appreciate if you'd use our link. Okay, we saw a couple movies this week.
We did. Yeah.
And we're going to talk about both of them because they really fit in with a lot of themes that we've talked about in the past year. About how our institutions, our political institution and our media institutions are failing.
Yep.
I want to start by talking about Tamir Rice for just a moment.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
First of all, Jeb Bush said that he got mixed up and said Tamir Rice was in Chicago, which is an easy mistake to make. I will give him credit for, you know, being on the campaign trail and not being keeping things straight. But Tamir Rice in Cleveland, the grand jury decided that no one was to blame for Tamir Rice's death.
Nope.
And it was a lynching. That's what it was. And so justice has not been done in this case and many others. And to me, this is the tragedy of this year, is the number of American citizens who have been shot by the taxpayers' police department because of the color of their skin.
And the secondary tragedy, nothing is as tragic as losing a family member, especially to violence and in their youth. Since we all, you know, all men are mortal, so, but this is horrifying. Mm-hmm. What I have determined to keep my own self sane is not to engage anyone on these matters over social media. Because Brother Charlie Pierce wrote a very nice piece about this, and you know he's written a million pieces about a million. Y'all have, you know, lots of this has happened over and over and over again, and it's just numbing. And the worst part, other than the actual tragedy and injustice of it, is watching each of these occasions be swarmed by the same ghoulish right-wing trolls gleefully take a shit at a funeral. Mm-hmm. And talk about how they had it coming. The blacks had it coming. And this 12-year-old, and it's always the same story. He's big and he's menacing and he shouldn't have done this and he shouldn't have done that. And there's always some semantic reason why it was justified.
Yeah.
And you can't engage with these people because, you know, on this particular issue, they're automaton. They have one emotional setting, which is they like to make liberals cry. And what makes liberals more upset than having someone show up at a tragedy and saying, yeah, the kid had it coming.
Yeah.
And talking about, you know, gun fetish specifics. You don't understand how the loading procedure is for the automatic rifle that I particularly own. So I don't have to listen to you. And just this sort of really creepy, inhuman obsession with murdering people and then laughing about it.
Yeah,
and getting away with it. And again, these are the same people who called Cliven Bundy a hero, who was actually pointing real guns, that he and his friends were pointing real guns at police. And the cops de-escalated and were delighted at the idea of someone shoving a gun in cops' faces, because that'll show the jackbooted authorities, you know, who's really in charge.
Yeah.
But don't, I just, from my own personal perspective, don't engage these people. Don't talk
to them. On that note, share something that Carolee wrote over at Crooks and Liars a couple days ago. She was at showed a video of a campaign rally in Mechanicsville, Virginia, of all white voters supporting Ted Cruz. And this woman says, you know, Obama ruined Christmas and let Muslims do blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, just went on.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolee made the statement that the media in the village, all these villagers say, well, these are frustrated voters who feel unrepresented.
Yeah.
And Carolee made the point there are some people who should feel unrepresented.
Right.
They're called bigots.
Yeah. Yeah.
People who choose to declare white supremacy because they're Christian and white shouldn't be represented.
Yeah.
They are un-American and they should not be represented. Their ideas should not be represented either in polite culture or in our government, because we are a constitutional democracy that gives all people equal rights, period.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think we on the left tend to be a little bit too polite sometimes. I love that time back when Obama, you know, was elected in 2009, was inaugurated, and they went around. Do you remember? I think actually it was Christmas 2008. They went around to Best Buys where people were camped out to get. This camera crew went around to people who were camped out to buy bargains for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
In white enclaves and asked them, you know, do you want your country back?
Yeah.
and they said, yes, I want my country back. And the cameraman said, no, you can't have your country back.
You broke it. Sorry. You fucked it up and you broke it.
Yeah,
you broke it.
And you don't get your country back.
No.
So whether or not you ever had it is another story. But no, you don't get your country back.
Well,
so,
and there will always be screaming, you know, bug-eyed lunatics who will delight at the tragedies of others. You are not obliged to point cameras at them.
No.
And ask
them
their
opinion. You're not obliged to follow them on Facebook or engage them in any way.
You as an individual are not obliged. But our media is in no way obliged to take them seriously. Yeah. You can report on them as a tragic consequence of ignorance, inbreeding, and bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
That is, isn't it a shame that there are still people who are this fucked in the head?
So, and ignorant, just, like you say, inexperienced, have never been overseas, have no idea, have zero black people in their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
You know,
and who get all their news out of Rush Limbaugh's anus.
Right.
Isn't it a shame that these pig ignorant inbred lunatics are still among us? But I guess that's the consequence of living in a democracy. At no point are you obliged in the media to take their position as a reasonable alternative to anything.
And I've said this before, but when you follow up someone like that with, and the polls say,
right. Yeah.
Without mentioning that it's a tragedy that 40% of, you know, middle America and 70% of the Republican Party is this degraded, you are collaborating with that.
You certainly are. You are a collaborator. And you deserve to be treated as a collaborator.
Yep.
You are not our friends. You are not on our side. You are not a part of this democracy.
You're not the fifth estate.
You are a fifth column.
Exactly.
And you are here, exactly. The fourth estate.
Fourth estate. You're not the fourth estate. You're the fifth column.
And you are profiting from enabling evil people to wreck my country.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that we are a little itty bitty podcast in the middle of a cornfield, and this week we watched another Koch brother funded right-wing institution swallow up more of our local media.
Yes we did.
Which we'll talk about in a little bit when we talk about media fail. I don't care how dismembered MSNBC becomes. I don't care how muzzled and neutered the few remaining liberals on television have to be just to get on camera. I don't care. I mean, I would like that to not be true, but that doesn't affect me in any way. I still get to have a microphone because I have a lovely wife and a podcast. But that doesn't affect how you or I or anybody who listens to our podcast or anything like this should feel about the core problem. It mm-hmm. just means that we are losing megaphones. But as long as we still have mimeograph machines and email and podcasts, mm-hmm. We're not going to stop talking about this.
Nope. And that's one of my wishes and I'll just say this as part of my living will. When I die, no one is allowed to say rest in peace because I'm going to be on the front lines wherever, when I get to heaven or wherever I wind up, they're going to go, oh, here she is. Everybody get your swords. We're going out for a fight. Let's go.
We'll go with Melissa Harris Perry as the struggle continues.
Yeah. Well, and there are angels in the Bible that are, you know, Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. And so there are angels that are warriors, and I'll be right alongside them. So no rest in peace for Blue Gal. So we saw two movies. I want to talk about the second one first. I want to talk about Spotlight first.
Okay. I want to include a warning mm-hmm. to our audience.
Yeah.
That you should not see these movies back to back.
No.
Because I remember my quick review of Spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to beat Wall Street to death with the Catholic Church.
And the other movie that we saw is The Big Short.
The Big Short.
So we will be talking about that in a minute. But let's talk about Spotlight first.
And I'm quite serious. Take a pause for
a couple days in between these two. Because you need this mental space.
Yeah.
They aren't. They won't destroy you like Schindler's List does.
Yeah.
But they're big. They're big. True to life. Real. Based on true stories. Big movies, and you need some space in order to absorb what happens in them because they're true. These things really happen. So Spotlight, you said, and I agree with you completely, you can really understand why reporters love this movie.
Real reporters love this movie. Love it.
Uh-huh. Yep.
It is
about reporting.
It's about a special team at the Boston Globe who uncovered the priest child molestation scandal in Boston. And
they didn't just uncover that. They uncovered how high up the cover up. I mean, the cover up wasn't worse than the crime, but the cover up exacerbated the crimes to the point where something had to be done.
And the editor understood this. That was the part that I really, really enjoyed. The new editor, the guy who took over the paper, running the paper, was the one who had their back.
Yeah.
We really say, okay, you found this, but that's not enough. You found that, but that's not enough. You've traced it to the bishop, the archbishop, or the cardinal, but that's not enough. You have to, this is a story of institutional failure.
And we're not going to spoil the movie any more than that.
No.
But the gumshoe reporting and the finding paper, the paper trails that they find to make the story flesh out is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And things they find by accident and things they find by sheer ingenuity of, let's look at this because there's a clue here. And it is very Sherlockian in terms of, here's a clue as to how the Catholic Church covered things up. Let's pursue this. And they do. They find following little leads and just doing sheer gumshoe, wear out my shoes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to travel and go and find this stuff.
Right. Over and over again.
Over and over again. They undo it.
Knock on people's doors. They call them over and over again. Mm-hmm. And this is where the institutional difference between bloggers and newspapers.
This was what was really depressing for you.
Well, it comes into really sharp relief because everywhere along the road, everyone involved in this investigation, all the good guys come up against incredible barriers.
Yeah.
Nobody wants this story investigated.
Well, it's the Irish Catholic Mafia mentality that says you don't question the church.
Yeah.
You know, you can go after an individual priest if he's really bad.
Yep.
And that's a bad apple, and there are bad apples.
And trust the church to take care of it. You don't need to take court or anything.
Right. But you don't go after, that's like going after God. You don't go after the Roman Catholic Church.
Well, every shot of a school in this movie, there's a church behind it. Every event
has a church behind it. Everything is, and Catholicism in Boston. I mean, that's what every politician is, head of every institution, your banker, your lawyers, everybody is part of that club. The cops, everybody.
And so you have these people who had been trying to bring this to light for years.
Yeah.
Who'd been buried.
Mm-hmm.
Who'd absolutely, and every time they get a little bit closer, a benevolent city father that you went to high school with and you know him from way back in the neighborhood, comes out of the woodwork to say, Johnny, Jimmy, come on.
Yeah.
This is a great city. You know, you don't want to destroy this wonderful
Look at all the good stuff they do.
Look at all the good they do. And every step along the way, incredibly clear, at every level of society, pressure, shame at the victim's level, the church denying everything.
Well, and all of the reporters being in some way connected to the church, either or disconnected from the church. That part of it, again, I don't want to spoil it for anyone. I found it fascinating, the reaction that the reporters had in different individual ways to we're going after the church and the struggle that was for them. also, you and I want to talk about casting, because casting is everything.
Yeah. And both movies, the casting was excellent.
Casting's amazing. Yeah. Just amazing. The casting of the reporters, I thought, was good. But the casting of the victims and the smaller parts in this movie are what make this movie so vibrant.
Yep.
The Irishness really jumps off the screen. And they made an editorial decision in this movie that I thought was interesting.
You actually lived in Boston.
I lived in Boston
for
14 years. Huh? I was not there when these events happened. I had already left. I moved out of Boston in 96. But I was there when Cardinal Law, who is now living over in Rome.
In protective custody.
He escaped.
Yeah.
The grand jury is what he did. And I have to agree with Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly says Cardinal Law should be extradited. You know, credit where credit is due. Bill O'Reilly is correct about that. But Cardinal Law, who is at the center of this story in terms of whether he was involved in covering up priest abuse of children, is a very flamboyant person. There's no other way to put it. He is Marcus Bachmann with a priest costume on. Okay. And I went back last night after we'd seen this movie. I went back and looked at Nightline and a couple of other news stories and interviews and panel shows about these events. And to a person, the people talking about, and this was, some of them were from the time when Cardinal Law resigned as Archbishop of the Diocese of Boston. Cardinal of...
Because he was elevated.
He was elevated to cardinal, right. And to a person, they mention his idiosyncrasies. Which is, you know...
His great love of jewelry.
His great love... and Tiffany's and decorating and, And I remember distinctly the day that he came back to Boston having been elevated to cardinal. And the reporters met him at the airport. And I cannot find video of this because this was the 80s. And so it's not on YouTube. I wish someone with, you know, access to a Boston News Archive would find this video because it is absolutely stunning. He is standing in Logan Airport surrounded by reporters. They're all kind of closing in on him. And he waves his hand in the air and he says, I got my ring.
You'd just gotten back from Rome.
From Rome, and, you know, where he'd been elevated to cardinal, and he waves his ring in the air. I got my ring. And then he said, and now, excuse me, but I have to go see my mother.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it's Liberace.
Yeah.
It is. It's Marcus Bachmann. It's He's excited about his jewelry and his mother, and... You know, okay. And I remember seeing that live on the news in Boston and thinking to myself, wow, he is flamboyant for sure. But then I thought to myself, but he's a priest.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And turns out, you know, that is not connecting homosexuality to pedophilia. Let's be clear about that.
Absolutely not. Remember.
He had stuff in his closet that hiding was part of his DNA. Let's put it that way. Hiding and hypocrisy was part of his DNA. Yeah. And the director and screenwriter of Spotlight left this part of his personality out of the movie quite consciously.
The point of this was the church is full. The church has had recruited like 50% of priests were sexually active.
Yeah.
According to one statistic they quoted. And since they're not allowed to be, and everyone looks the other way, this is just this is just, you know, going out with women, having sex with them,
adults of any kind,
right?
Other adults.
But you've created a culture that attracts people, and insists that they lie about their personal life, insists that they cover things up, insists that they look the other way when they know what's going on.
This really was an indictment of celibacy for priesthood. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
lie it is. Yeah.
And when you realize, as one reporter does, this is happening in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
This is not far away. This is happening. And the way that it unfolds from the numbers and the degree of complicity keeps going up exponentially.
Right.
And they start wondering just how big the problem actually is tragic. But now here's the part that I was talking about, what separates journalists of this era. I mentioned after the movie, I thought that this and All the President's Men should be shown back to back. All the President's Men as a piece of history about what journalism should be, and this about what journalism used to be. Because this idea that you have an entire department, you have four dedicated reporters focused on this, plus the access to the resources of the Boston Globe, that could just take a few months to figure out what they want to talk about.
Yeah, you know, and take a couple of years to cover a story.
Yeah.
Take years to go in depth and interview everybody.
And really, yeah. But you had the leisure, and these were not lazy people.
No,
but you had the flexibility. You had the institutional capacity to think about what you wanted your next story to be next. Well, we're not really sure. We're thinking about this, but maybe that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're just sort of mulling over all the choices that we have, and we're sort of trolling. He said that one of the people said trolling out there for what our next story is going to be. But you could have the time, and these are all people who are on salary.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are not cranking out a blog post every 3 hours.
Right.
Just to keep their head
with hit bait. Right.
With hit bait. They want to go deep on an important story, and one of them. And the only thing that people ask them internally is, as each piece of the story comes out, how long do you think this piece will take? A couple of weeks, a couple of days, a couple of months, whatever it is. Okay, all right, you do that, you take that. They had the backing of the fellow reporters, of their graphics department, of their librarians, of their
research assistants. Yeah, the librarians were amazing in this. Yeah,
all the people who could pull for them. You could dispatch one of your team to the state capitol or to Springfield.
Yeah, Springfield, Massachusetts, to cover a court case.
To just sit in the court case
for
one specific reason related to the story all day long. You had the time to do these things. And you had a paper that was willing to pay these people to do these things.
And
everybody had your back up to the publisher. This was going on and on. The new editor, this probably not giving anything away, was Jewish.
Yes.
And all the people outside the paper were wondering what his agenda was, and were
Jewish and not a Bostonian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, just the first two things you could be. And they were.
And he didn't like baseball. He didn't want to go to Fenway. Oh my God.
Three strikes, baby. But right down the line, these people had each other's backs, and they had an institution. I know I've repeated that word, but the theme this week is institutional failure. Their institution, they clearly understood what they were supposed to do. The cardinal at one point says, or someone once says, you know, it's the city works best when all of our leading institutions get along with each other. And the newspaper guy says, no. The city works best when the newspaper stands alone and isn't part of the club. But you had people at every level, from reporter to the guy who ran the outfit, to the editor, who was Ben Bradley III, to the chief, all of whom had connections all throughout society. And they all knew each other. They all had gone to school together. They'd all had everyone who was on the among the bad guys and the good guys, they all knew each other for generations. And the fact that they could dig into the story and not worry about being sued, because they had lawyers at their back, and they wouldn't have to worry about being buried under an avalanche of shit, because they were given the space and the time necessary to cover a story for real, is something that just is not true anymore.
Yeah,
it's just gone, and it's gone because, frankly, going after stories in depth and in detail does not serve the institutional motives of the corporations that now run our media.
Exactly right, and actually, now that I think more about this movie, as you say, this movie is about the end of journalism. This is the story that the last great story in journalism.
Yeah.
And you see that. You see the shark coming in, because the first thing they want to know about the new editor is, you know, we know you're going to cut the staff. We know you're going to cut everybody, because the Internet's just come in. You know, the Internet is now taking over. And so who are you going to cut was sort of their first question.
Yeah.
So, it is the beginning of the end. It's it's a tragedy on a lot of levels. This movie is well made. Mm-hmm. It is not flashily directed.
Nope.
It's
nope.
told very straightforwardly. Unlike the
Big Short.
The other movie we saw.
That's why I think if it comes down to an Oscar fight, I think Spotlight will win, because Spotlight is a serious movie about a serious subject, and The Big Short is a funny movie.
And I really wish that it would be the other way around.
I do too.
I really wish The Big Short would win Best Picture, because to me, this was one of the best movies I have ever seen.
Yeah.
Stayed with me for days and days.
It still does. And it refracts and reflects other things so beautifully. And that's what we're going to talk about.
And the direction of it is just amazing. Uh-huh. The acting, Steve Carell. I said to you, Steve Carell, he needs to play Harlan Ellison in the biopic. Yeah, he really does.
In the inevitable Harlan Ellison biopic.
Inevitable Harlan Ellison biopic. He's on my list. But he is, all of them are amazing. Yep. Brad Pitt is amazing in this movie.
Again, great casting.
Great casting. And of highs and lows, the small parts are given just as much attention to detail. And the confidence of the acting, the confidence of the storytelling, the ability to, many reviews have mentioned they break the fourth wall from time to time in this movie.
On purpose.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm sorry, with obviously directed, but with a really clear purpose. And it's
a really clear purpose that you are a victim and you are part of this story.
Right.
And it is, as everyone probably knows, about the great banking crisis of 2008, mm-hmm. Wall Street crisis. And it reminds me, I mean, people are pairing these two movies together because the way they got away with it was to treat very specific victimization of human beings as a big abstract thing that you really can't understand.
Very good, very big and complicated. And they make
and really the church can take care of the pre-scandal, and Wall Street will regulate itself. These institutions will regulate themselves.
And when you get a glimpse, when people start getting a glimpse of how big the problem might actually be,
mm-hmm.
no one
mm-hmm.
believes it. Because it can't be that big.
It can't possibly be that bad.
It can't be that bad. Because
it reminded me, Driftglass, of Donald Trump this week.
Yep. Yep.
When Bernie Sanders called out Donald Trump for saying wages are too low.
Yep.
And Donald Trump said, I never said that. Well, of course, it's on video at the debate that he said it.
Twice, yeah.
But he said it in the abstract.
Right, right.
You can't say wages are too low in the abstract when people listening to you are the ones getting those low wages.
Right.
You cannot abstract what is happening in the economy anymore.
Well, sure.
People are living it.
Well, this is where you and I would respect.
And I know you're going to disagree with me.
Because
so go right ahead.
The people who are listening to Donald Trump here, those people's wages are too high.
Yeah.
You work really hard. I'm going to make you a winner. But you know, those lazy mooching takers, they're the ones who are being paid too.
Well, and the Mexicans, their wages are too high.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we're talking about. Right. Right.
And the places where that I remember most vividly, where they broke the fourth wall, where they did the Woody Allen thing, they turned the camera, were mm-hmm. specifically targeted to the audience, and they were specifically targeted to telling the audience, look, the language involved in this weird stuff going on here was designed to be boring and complicated.
Yep.
To convince you that this is so complicated, you couldn't possibly understand it. You leave all these complicated financial transactions to the geniuses of Wall Street. You little person couldn't possibly fucking understand what's really going on here. So now we're going to have a stripper explain it to you.
Yeah. Or a sexy blonde naked woman.
Yeah, in a tub, having champagne. And it isn't that complicated when they explain it to you in language that isn't designed to confuse and bore you. It isn't mm-hmm. that complicated. But there's so many technical terms that were floating around in the universe at that time.
Well, and when you do understand it, you realize how screwed we all are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the takeaway. My big takeaway from Spotlight was, my God, look at the institutional devotion of resources that these people got from their boss to dig and dig and dig and dig and dig. And my big takeaway, there are a lot of takeaways from The Big Short. It's a wonderful movie. But mm-hmm. it's these guys figure out what's going on. And they it's not giving anything away to say they take a financial position. They're not crusaders. They're not there to save the world. Some of them are, but they're not there to save the world necessarily. They see what's coming. They can't stop it, but they figure out a way to make a profit from it. There are moments when our heroes can't believe what they're learning.
Yeah.
And how they can't believe how open people are with their information. And that's because they have to keep stepping further and further back until they realize, holy shit, the whole system's broken. It isn't just the housing market. There's all these other things that have been attached to the housing market.
Yep. And as long as everybody's making money,
nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares that it's on a throne of lies.
But this leads us to our American political and media establishment.
Yeah, and our election process. And I do want to mention that the Republican Party, the Republicans on the Federal Election Commission, have just decided we're not going to govern elections anymore.
Right. And we can do that. We're just going to refuse to enforce the law.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do about it?
Yep.
And I wrote a little post earlier this week entitled The Giant Bubble Made of Wine.
Mm-hmm.
And really,
W-H-I-N-E.
Uh-huh. And I was really kind of moved to do so because all bubbles collapse. The housing bubble collapsed. The tech bubble collapsed. I note that the great tulip madness of the 1600s collapsed. The one thing, the bubble that has never collapsed is the unhinged conservative bedwetting bubble.
Yeah.
30 years is
going
strong.
You mean that one where people freak out over Barack Obama, the Kenyan usurper, stealing Christmas from us?
That never collapses. It always pays 10 to 1, and it never collapses. And that's because the whole system is broken. The whole system is broken. The people who should have been reporting on what was going on in the Republican Party refuse to do so because they've got kids in school and they've got a mortgage to pay. And the people who should have been policing the crazy inside the party were making way too much goddamn money, letting the crazy run wild. And the people who were desperately trying to jump up and down and warn what was going on, the liberals, were being thrown out of the room. We're never allowed anywhere near the microphone.
Yeah.
And this is what really makes me angriest, is not that the Republican Party is a corrupt whorehouse full of lunatics and bigots and sociopaths and paranoids, but the fact that the people who were supposed to point a camera at it and stop it, or at least talk about it, honestly, categorically refused to do so. Really, I mean, and this is all, while liberals...
And consciously refused to do it.
Consciously, as a part of their business model, instead of putting someone on the air to say, look, the Republican Party is losing its shit and it's really dangerous and maybe we should do something about it. Instead of that, they put Ruth Marcus on the air and David Brooks on the air and Ron Fortier to say, no, everyone is equally corrupt. Everything's bad. Some reasonable center will emerge and everything will be fine. No, it won't. That's never going to happen. The reasonable center is dead. You killed it. And the problem is the Republican Party, just like the problem was the housing market. And unless you fix it, it's going to take us all down. And now that we've reached the point where Donald Trump is the leading contender for the Republican nomination, all the people who were lying to themselves, lying to us, covering it up, refusing to cover it, covering the politics the way the financial press covered the housing market and the way the tech press covered the tech market before the collapse, which is everything's great, everything's fine. We're just going to go up forever. Everything is wonderful. All those people are now going, how the hell did Donald Trump ever come into existence? No one could have predicted that Donald Trump would be, my God, how that ever happened. Well, yeah, people did predict it. People have been talking about it. You people, being the congenital liars that you are, who are deeply bought into this utterly corrupt system, simply refuse to report on it.
Yep.
And that's your great sin. That's the one you're going to burn in hell for. And to those of you who work at liberal, the last bastion of liberal television, I'm really disappointed that you won't turn your cameras on the Republican Party and point at them just once and say, have Norm Ornstein on.
Yeah.
Thomas Mann on 3 days a week. At least as often as you point at Ben Dominic. Have somebody on television who will look into the camera and tell people the truth. Because the market has already collapsed. The Republican Party is already dead. It's already fallen apart. It's already just a cesspool of crazy ideas and dangerous people who really need to be brought under control. And that's the thing that makes me dispirited. I feel like Steve Carell. I know I step back from the system and go, oh, no wonder all of the warnings, all of the desperate arm waving, all of the Digby writing this and Charlie Pierce writing that and me writing the other and all the people jumping up and down at the Nation did no good at all because the institution itself is the problem. And until we take out the media, until Chuck Todd is unemployed. Like, the people who were making fortunes during the housing bubble,
yep,
who were on the unemployment line, yep, after it collapsed, Chuck Todd needs to have his resume in his hand and looking for work, getting retrained as a CNC or lathe operator. Because until that happens, the institutional liars who keep pretending this is either a both sides problem or it's really not that bad are the ones who are making it unrecoverable, are making the system so broken that it's going to take a generation to fix it. And that's what makes me the angriest, is they know
better. And I think what's happening, though, Driftglass, is that more and more people are looking outside the village for news,
yeah,
because they can't trust the village anymore. And that's been true for a long time. And we have avenues. And I'm not trying to turn your frown upside down, but because you're Irish and you like being bitter.
I do.
But but really, we are taking advantage of the opportunities that we have, mm-hmm, to be the media and to call them out on it.
Right.
And it is funny to look at these top 10 stories of the year kind of thing and realize that the color of the dress back in March was the top story of March 2015. You know, what color is this dress was what the village wanted to talk about, what the mainstream media wanted to talk about. And we're better than that. And we're better at what we do than they are. And we have the distinct advantage of having zero friends in the Congress to try to have cocktail parties with. You know, we don't have to share Chardonnay with Louis Gohmert or whoever it is to make sure they come back on our show. You know, we can talk through that.
I promise at the top of the podcast I would mention what's going on.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. In Illinois. News consolidation.
Yeah. Huh. And this is sort of like, as I wrote today, while the institutional left continues to lose ground and throw nickels around like manhole covers, that's something I believe I stole that quote from Mike Ditka, talking about the family that owned the Bears. They throw nickels, yeah, around like manhole covers.
Mm-hmm.
The right continues to spend whatever it takes to take control of the means of message production.
Yep.
It's a group called the Illinois Policy Institute, which
funded by the Koch brothers.
Funded by the Koch brothers and funded by actually our governor Hedge Fund, before he was Governor Hedge Fund. His family had given them $625,000 since 2009. Jeez. Imagine what you could do with one contributor who gave you over $500,000 over the, yep, course of 6 years, 7 years. Imagine what you could do with that. And that's one person writing checks of many, mm-hmm, many, many crackpot billionaires and corporations. Because the Illinois Policy Institute cranks out that kind of Randite, right-wing, ALEC bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a team inside that organization called the Illinois News Network. And they're the ones who crank out content. Free content. It's free,
yeah,
kids. You don't even need reporters anymore. You can get rid of, yeah, all your journalists because there's all this free content out there. They'll provide you with white papers and charts and quotes.
And actual news reports.
Actual news reports. All right. From a libertarian, crazy Ayn Rand perspective. All right wing. There's no problem we can't tax, cut, and deregulate our way out of.
Yep.
And that's been, and they exist. And they're another of the many, many, many ALEC / Koch brother / Americans for Prosperity front groups that are everywhere and that are massively well-funded. So the so before he was governor, Bruce Rauner, Governor Hedge Fund, funded this group, his family did, to the tune of $625,000. After he became governor, he hired three people from the Illinois Policy Institute to help enact the terrible policies that they had only dreamed of all those years. And now, finally, the propaganda arm of the Illinois News Network, the Illinois Policy Institute, the Illinois News Network, is acquiring the Illinois Radio Network, which has reporters...
Insane!
Which has reporters in Springfield and Chicago and provides news reports to stations throughout the state, including WTAX-AM right here in Springfield.
Yep.
So they already have spent enough money to crank out content. And now they have purchased a distribution network because that's what you can do with that kind of money.
Yeah. And there's no one who is policing the purchase of media anymore.
Nope. Absolutely not.
No one is saying, oh, no, you can't have a lobbying organization buying a news network, mm-hmm, because freedom, I guess.
And I will give you one more quick quote. Mike Lawrence, longtime State House reporter, I'm reading from the article, who became former GOP Governor Jim Edgar's press secretary, is retiring from the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, called the sale an unfortunate development. This is a Republican guy, Jim Edgar, former governor, his press secretary. He said, the Illinois Policy Institute is a group that has a very definite ideological agenda, and I would be surprised if it did anything else other than to advance that agenda through its newly acquired operation.
Mm-hmm.
They're buying the news.
Yep.
They're buying the news, and they're flanking us on all sides. And it's not just happening at the network level. It's not just happening at MSNBC, losing their liberal voices one at a time and being replaced by either centrist drones or outright Republican operatives. It's happening at the state level, too. And that's what happens when you have an unlimited budget and a clear agenda and a willingness to focus.
And a lot of money. Yep.
And a willingness to focus for decades on getting what you want.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yep.
Anyway,
so.
Happy 2016, people.
Yeah, and watch out.
Yeah.
And when you see something, say something.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Walenda. Walenda is at Shocks Kitty, by the way. Walenda, in this picture, is watching football MST3K style. You see the little silhouette in the corner of the screen while he's watching football. She doesn't like selfies, by the way. She's camera shy because she's so damn vain, is what Shock says. Shock told her that she was Internet Kitty of the Week, and she snored at him.
Yeah, whatever.
That is Walenda speak for, yeah, awesome.
Mm-hmm. Move along, people.
Okay.
I don't have time for your nonsense.
I don't have time for your nonsense. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. We need more Internet Kitties, people.
We do. 2016 has to be a year of the renaissance of Internet Kitties.
Yeah, and someone sent us a Christmas card with these beautiful kitties, I think 6 of them on one card, and I need a digital photo of that, so I'm going to try to scan it, but if I can't, do send it. If you sent me the Persian kitty Christmas card, please send me a digital photo of that, because it was amazing. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And if there was any kind of lesson that I could promote to all of our listeners and anyone out there who supports a liberal cause, it would be that $5 makes a difference.
It does.
It really does, regardless of what charity or, and we're not a charity, but whatever group or institution you want to support, $5 always makes a difference. Be aware of that. Don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, but we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. And you can bookmark that link. You can go to our website, click on it, and then bookmark that link, and that can be your Amazon button on your browser forever, and it will always go to our cause. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a PayPal or check contribution, and you can too. See our website professionalleft.blogspot.com for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or give us a thumbs up at Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are grateful that the political silly season of 2015 is over and we can get on with the serious business of electing a president. We think the kitties are drunk.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Hello.
Hello, sweetie.
Hello, sweetie. Science Fiction University, we have a double dose for you, Driftglass.
Ooh, this is our year-end Science Fiction University. So, you know, we're just going to get drunk.
Double dose. We're going to double dose it.
Uh-huh.
Part one is from Raymond, our friend Raymond, and part two is from Dogface Herman. So,
oh, man. Okay.
It's a double dose. You better gear up for this. Mm-hmm. Raymond sent us a series of clips. All of these are related to passwords.
Ooh.
Yeah. So try these and see if you can identify the show where they are discussing passwords or passcodes or codes to get into something.
Okay.
All right. Number one.
The combination is 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, 3, 3, 4, 4, 4, 5, 5, 5. So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life. That's the kind of thing an idiot would have on his luggage.
Thank you, Your Highness.
What did you do? I turned off the wall. Wait, didn't you turn off the whole movie?
I must have pressed the wrong button.
Well, put it back on.
Yes, sir.
Hey, we're back.
Unless I miss my guess, that is from the really bad Spaceballs.
That is from Spaceballs, yes.
I did not like Spaceballs. The person I went with liked it a great deal. I did not.
It was really not Mel Brooks' best movie.
No. It was uneven.
Uneven, yes.
I liked certain lines from it. I liked Dark Helmet. And I liked something about I'm your cousin's friend from college.
Yeah.
And so forth. That's about it. That's the rest of it could just go hang. But for some weird reason, I do remember that.
Yeah. All right, let's try this one. Number two.
Computer, establish a security code for access to all functions previously transferred to bridge.
Enter code.
1-7-3-4-6-7-3-2-1-4-7-6-Charlie-3-2-7-8-9-7-7-7-6-4-3-Tango-7-3-2-Victor-7-3-1-1-7-8-8-8-7-3-2-4-7-6-7-8-9-7-6-4-3-7-6. Lock.
Security code intact for all specified inquiries and orders.
Computer, initiate cascade sequence. Accepting instructions from Commander Data en route.
Oh yeah, that's Star Trek: The Next Generation. That is Data imitating Jean-Luc Picard because he has gotten the recall code from his daddy. I think that's the one where this is, and he has to go home. He must go home now, and that's the imperative button. Dad said, "Come home," so he's doing whatever he has to do to get back to his creator.
Cool.
I believe that is correct. I might be horribly wrong, but I think that's right.
All right, let's try number three.
Do you guys have a self-destruct code, like destruct sequence 1A, 2B, 3?
Thanks a lot, Decay. Now everybody knows.
Oh, come on now.
This one is really funny.
Come on. Bender spoiled it, because that's George Takei.
Yes, it is.
And it's Futurama.
It is Futurama.
Which is science fiction, people. It absolutely is, and it loves the genre more than life itself, and that's really cool. But yeah, that's hilarious.
All right, try this one, number four.
Deploy proximity fused anti-ship fragmentation mines. Set fuses for 500 kilometers.
Warning, specified proximity exceeds safety margin.
Override safety protocols, authorization code. Shut up and do what I tell you.
Authorization accepted.
Number four, I have no idea. It sounds like something from the mid-80s.
Actually, it's from 2000.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, well, Andromeda, which was a Gene Roddenberry sci-fi series.
Yeah, okay.
And this Andromeda, this is...
I can't judge it, having never seen it, but I'm going to say, should have left that one in the box. Majel Barrett should not have... Oh, look what I found in the bottom of the sock drawer.
Uh-huh.
But hey, you know, it might have been awesome, but I clearly don't know what I'm talking about. So I have no idea. Thanks for Star Trek, Gene. And the rest, okay.
All right, let's try number five.
Beam me aboard.
Aye, sir. Queen to Queen's level 3.
I said beam me aboard.
I said Queen to Queen's level 3.
We have no time for chest problems. Beam me aboard.
I'm following your orders, Captain. Queen to Queen's level 3.
Just testing. Be in touch with you later.
That would be the original Star Trek. That would be the Kirk Star Trek. A duplicate of Kirk or a clone, a copy of him or something, is trying to get back to the ship. But they've cleverly thought of a way of using a code, password, handshake kind of deal to save the ship. The number of times that Star Trek has had to sort of overcome the fact that they just thought something up this week that could have saved them last week is hilarious. But sort of squint past that because, you know, they were knocking them out pretty quick.
All right. Do you know, Raymond asks you, do you know the correct response to Queen to Queen's level 3?
Go fish, I believe.
Correct. No.
No. Because that would be awesome if they did that. No?
No, it is Queen to King's level 1.
Oh, see.
And clearly they are playing three-dimensional chess. Spock's, you know, modern or futuristic chess game.
Yes. Which I have enough trouble with two-dimensional chess.
Yeah,
I
accept my goodness,
that
yes. Zess
and Spock can win most of the time. Except when the computer has been tampered with.
Oh.
And Spock figures out it's been tampered with by beating the computer at
chess.
That's
the Kobayashi Maru all over again. That's what that is. All right. Finally, number 6.
Destruct sequence 1, code 1. 1A.
Voice and code 1, 1A. Verified and correct. Sequence 1 complete.
That sounds really familiar.
Again, it's more Star Trek.
The two things that Jim Kirk did better than anyone else, other than screwing aliens, having sex with aliens, is, and violating the Prime Directive, constantly. He really was the worst captain in Star Trek in the Federation because he did everything you're not supposed to do.
Yeah.
Was threatening to blow the ship up.
Yep.
And talking computers into committing suicide.
Yeah. Yeah. He was good at that.
Computer. And I just think that's awesome. I think I wouldn't have any other captain than Jim Kirk be Jim Kirk because he's the perfect swaggering cowboy captain.
Now, there was one more password item that Raymond knows about but could not find in audio.
Okay.
Because it was a Tom Baker Doctor Who episode. There's an episode of Doctor Who with Tom Baker called The Invasion of Time, where he is in the Chancellor's office and he's trying to figure out the door code. And the door code is, there is nothing more useless than a lock with a voice key. So he apologizes he couldn't find audio of that, but that is a great passcode from the old Doctor Who. First Doctor.
I'm impressed with his selection. I would add to the list probably the most famous password in movies, in science fiction movies, would have to be Joshua.
Yeah, from War Games.
War Games.
Right. The backdoor code to War Games. Yeah. All right, let's move on to part 2 with Dog-Faced Herman.
Yay!
Thank you, Dog-Faced Herman. And Dog-Faced Herman has revealed to us the source of his name.
What?
We had a wonderful post over at Daily Kos about our podcast. If you go and look up Professional Left at Daily Kos, you will find this lovely post about our podcast and all of the items in it. And thank you so much for doing that. Bethesda 1971 did a lovely post about the Professional Left called The Professional Left, Outrage, Humor, and Love in a Must-Listen Podcast.
Mm.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
And so appreciate that article over at Daily Kos about our podcast. But Bethesda also mentions Science Fiction University's Dog-Faced Herman, the man with the world's most self-deprecating pseudonym. And Dog-Faced Herman wrote back to us and said that actually Yeah, it's kind of self-deprecating, but it's actually named after a 90s punk band, the Dog-Faced Hermans.
Ah.
So that's where he got his name.
Ah.
He sent us 5 clips, and these are not trivia, he says. I was thinking about how comic books have what's called a splash page. Splash as in splash in water.
Uh-huh.
A splash page is that first page of a comic book that is meant to grab the reader. These clips are the splash page to movies and TV shows. What I'm looking for is how do the writers, directors, and sound mixers use the splash page as an entry point to the rest of the story?
Ooh.
All right.
Yeah.
So try this one, number one.
What is it that makes a man a man? Is it his origins, the way things start? Or is it something else, something harder to describe? For me, it all began in 1944. Classified mission off the coast of Scotland. The Nazis were desperate. Combining science and black magic, they intended to upset the balance of the war. I was 28, already a paranormal advisor to President Roosevelt. I could never have suspected that what would transpire that night would not only affect the course of history, but change my life forever.
All right, man, let's go. That would be Hellboy.
That's Hellboy.
Which I rather liked.
And he chose that one first because that's one of the best comic book movies he thinks out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from 2004.
That's a good introduction to who the bad guys are and what we're going to who we're going to have to turn to.
Well, when you're fighting the Nazis.
Exactly.
I hate those guys.
Hate
yeah.
Those.
All right. Mm-hmm. Number two.
Central Services. We do the work, you do the pleasure.
Hi there. I want to talk to you about ducts. Do your ducts seem old-fashioned, out of date? Central Services' new duct designs are now available in hundreds of different colors to suit your individual taste. Hurry now, while stocks last, to your nearest Central Services showroom. Designer colors to suit your demanding taste.
Ministry of Information, Deputy Minister Eugene Hellman.
Good evening, David.
What do you believe is behind this recent increase in terrorist bombings?
Bad sportsmanship. A ruthless minority of people seems to have forgotten certain good old-fashioned virtue. They just can't stand seeing the other fellow win.
Not a comic book, but a very fine movie, especially the sad one. This is Brazil.
This is Brazil, 1985.
Terry Gilliam's masterpiece, Brazil, which is full of ducts.
It's full of ducts.
Uh-huh, there are ducts
D-U-C-T-S,
everywhere.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. Yes. All right, number three.
Prove it.
It has begun.
The zoom zoom gives it away, way in the background there, and the tingy ting ting music. That's the reimagining of Battlestar Galactica. That's the pilot. That's the two or whatever was our pilot from the new Battlestar Galactica. Which, as I recall, I didn't have cable at the time and was working. This is how long ago it was. I had a full time job.
That's a long time ago.
Long, long time ago. And a friend of mine at work, the guy who worked for me, said, I've got cable, and he recorded it to hard drives.
Oh my gosh.
This is sort of like, you know, we were jury rigging up devices that have since become commonplace. And he handed it off to me and said, you're going to really like this, and it's Battlestar Galactica, but trust me, it doesn't suck.
And you went, yeah, right, sure.
Yeah, okay. shaking off the dust of what Harlan Ellison called Battlestar Ponderosa.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, Lauren Green in a cape overacting. But it was awesome. I was really impressed. The series was great. And
why was this particular scene or segment the splash page for Battlestar Galactica?
This was the return of the Cylons after whatever, 40-year absence. They'd been gone for a really long time. They thought they were dead. And this introduced both the classic red eye visor Cylon, looking much better, sleeker, much more menacing than the original series, obviously. And that, oh my God, Cylons have hot blonde chicks now. So
yeah, really tall, beautiful, mm-hmm. great bodied. Yeah.
They know how to, and they have infiltrated human society. And they are about to do something very, very bad. And this is their, we're back, which, you know, is a great way to start the.
And they destroy the Earth.
No, well, no, they don't. Nope, there's no Earth in this entire pyre. There is a mythical planet out there.
Called Earth.
Called Earth, that they sort of, no one believes in, but as a desperate measure to instill hope in the 60,000 or 50,000 survivors of the genocide of the entire human race, who are desperately trying to escape from the Cylons, they're going to go to Earth, which is, no one knows quite where it is, but this lie that their leader tells them to give them hope is what sustains them for a good chunk of the show. But it's a genius way to reimagine it, because it really is, after the clunky old robots that you hated in the 80s are gone, they've returned as you sleek.
Really badass.
Really badass. And they have their own religion, and they have their own language, and they have their own agenda, and they have their own reason for things, and there's multiple models. And it's very smart. And it timed really well, because it came out during, you know, there was a lot of very clear analogies to Iraq and torture
mm-hmm.
going on in this that were not an accident. And it was just a wonderful series, all the way up to the end. Where it kind of fell off the table, but I'm not going to talk about the end, because you might not have seen it. You might not have seen all of it.
You should see it.
But if you haven't seen the pilot yet, I don't feel really bad about spoiling that for you, because that's really sort of the whole show takes off from there. So, but go see it. It's very good. Good show.
All right. Here's a tough one. Number 4.
Now, come on. Hurry. The moon's rising. We've no time to lose. Oh, careful. Here he comes. Oh.
just resting, waiting for a new life to come.
Ooh. Wow. Okay, that sounds... Jeez, that sounds like Alistair Cook. No? He wasn't in any science fiction?
No.
Donald Pleasance.
Something older than that.
Older than that. Wolfman? It's a full moon.
Older than that.
Older than that.
Yeah, this is Frankenstein from 1931.
Jesus.
I know.
How did I not? Well, I'm sorry. That was beyond my guess range. It's also really good. I mean, the audio and stuff is very good.
And yes, I'm sure the audio has been remixed. Yeah. But this is Frankenstein 1931, and it's the splash page in that he is recovering a body to reanimate. And there you go.
Nice. Nice.
All right. So after that one, we're going to give you an easy one. Here's the last one, number 5.
Access negative. Pneumatic pressure negative. We are looking at 500 degrees. We are in pursuit. He is gaining, over.
He's heading for the moon. The
air cycle packs are not maintaining.
Eject, buckaroo. Eject.
What is going on?
This is control.
Stop my scope.
This is Chase One. We got his tracks. They go right up to a wall of rock. Holy shit!
Oh, here's the one that I can't imagine why they haven't done a goddamn remake of this goddamn movie. Or at least a sequel. This is Buckaroo Banzai.
It's Buckaroo. Why haven't they done that?
I don't know. They couldn't find anyone to play Perfect Tommy.
See? Because he's perfect.
Yeah. But now Ryan Gosling is among us, so we can play. We now have a Perfect Tommy.
That's really true.
I think most of the people who are in that are still around.
Yeah. They're also kind of old.
Yeah, but if you can remake Independence Day.
With
old Jeff Goldblum, who says... It's bigger. Basically, that's the tagline for the entire stupid movie. It's bigger. Then you can remake Buckaroo Banzai. You can either remake it or you can sequel it. Because
I think
it's,
you could.
John Lithgow is still out there, for God's sakes, people. Emilio Lozardo is still alive and on the run.
See?
you can do this movie tomorrow. You can do it with finger puppets. It'd be awesome.
See?
So, I don't know.
See?
I'm sure there's a story there. I just don't know what it is. But yeah, I love.
Did you know that Yo-Yo Dine, do you know what novel Yo-Yo Dine is mentioned in?
Novel?
Yeah, science fiction novel.
Is it before or after Buckaroo?
Before Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh. I don't.
It is The Crying of Lot 49 by Thomas Pynchon.
Oh, really? Oh, my, that's awesome.
1966.
Yeah.
And in that book... There is a fictional aerospace engineering company called Yo-Yo Dine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I learned something new today. That's awesome.
See? Yeah. That's
sweet.
That's from Boing Boing. Boingboing.net. They taught me that. So, all right. Well, thank you very much. Happy New Year, everybody. And I hope it's a wonderful year for all of you. We love you so much. I'm glad we've had another year together.
I love you, by the way.
I love you, too.